The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to the program. Mike Consul here reporting. We're going to talk about crowdfunding. That's a subject that was basically on fire in the business and investment news several years ago, and hasn't made a whole lot of headlines recently, although we do have our first full-length feature on crowdfunding in probably 2 or 3 years in the October edition, which is available online. And the ebook version. And if you subscribe to the print edition, you'll have it soon. That article, Benjamin Cole, our reporter on the case, quotes a lot of material sources. And only one human source. That one human source is a guy named Adam Gower, who is our guest today. He has got 30 plus years of real estate experience. Today, what he does is he focuses on building digital marketing systems for real estate professionals who want to raise more money. Who doesn't want to raise more money? And he has taught, according to his bio, he's taught more than 4,000 individuals how to build wealth, preserve capital, and earn passive income from investing in real estate. He has written a book on the subject of crowdfunding called Unleashed. And he joins us via the internet. Adam Gower, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike. It's a pleasure to be here.
But now let's get down to the nitty gritty. I said this was a hot topic years ago. Not so many headlines these days. And the sense I get is that crowdfunding hasn't really lived up to its celebrated advertising of years ago. Is that true or false?
Well, I'll tell you something. I am so happy that you picked up on this particular topic. I actually wrote it down when you first said it's not made the headlines since starting, because it made me wonder, what headlines are you reading? because in my world, it is dominating the news.
Really? Well, yeah. Let me give you my big three. Wall Street Journal, New York Times, and The Economist magazine. I don't see a whole lot of crowdfunding in there unless they're doing some small pieces in the nooks and crannies of the publications. I'm not really seeing a whole lot about it. But tell me, why are you being flooded with it right now? So what you're saying, it's as hot as ever, or maybe hotter than ever?
It is, yeah. The look, we did some research recently and discovered that actually last year, crowdfunding grew from $7 billion total in the United States in 2019 to $15 billion. $15 billion were raised for commercial real estate, specifically using crowdfunding regulations. That is a massive explosion in growth. And it's at the very, very beginning of what is a hockey stick growth trajectory. When it started, when it became legal in 2012, the laws weren't promulgated until 2014. And we were looking at growth lines of some of the major companies at that time, and they appeared to be on hockey stick type growth. But those were just, they were kind of anomalies. When you look at the way that the industry has grown over the last 7 years or so, what you see is that it really is exploding now. And that there were, it was what started was a burst of enthusiasm that has really now become mainstream. In fact, one more point on that, Mike, is that of all private capital raised last year, crowdfunding at $15 billion accounted for 25%. Of all capital raised, private equity, all capital raised last year. So it's gone from zero to 25% and is likely to dominate capital formation in, I would say, within the next 3 or 4 years.
Well, you know, we got, to begin with, again, the title of Adam's book is Unleash, which indicates that exactly what you're saying, that this thing is exploding. The concept has become unleashed. Is the capital flows into this from the mass affluent? I have some notes here that say, I think that you're indicating that institutional investors are suddenly getting interested. But just, I'm going to back up just 1 second before you address that, because I wanted to say we got excited about it, of course, at the time. The whole investment community, I think, did, because we thought in terms of low barriers to entry, low minimums, and the ability to own directly own real estate in a way that was not possible before, because the minimums were too high. There were too many fees associated with it, and so on. It's not like crowdfunding is free, but nonetheless, is the explosion of capital coming from the mass affluent as it was originally intended, or is it institutional players?
Yes. So you've asked a few questions. I'm just going to try and.
I tend to ask compound questions. No, sorry, I apologize about that.
No problem. I'm going to try and create a broad sweep that answers all of them in one go.
Okay.
So first of all, institutional investors are in a entirely different class. And we'll come and talk. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
The private investor world is strictly limited, at least the analysis that we did, strictly limited to the accredited investor. So that's somebody whose net worth is over $1 million, not including their primary residence, for that one person in your audience that doesn't know, or who earned $200,000 over the last 2 years and has a reasonable chance of earning the same amount this year, right? So that's the market you're talking about. There are approximately 11 million of those folk in the United States, and it is those people who are funding crowdfunded deals. That's the vast majority of what is going into commercial real estate, private equity, now via crowdfunding, right? So that's number one. Number two, you're quite right. Minimums have come down. Until the laws changed in 2012, it was prohibited for a sponsor to openly solicit somebody they did not have a pre-existing relationship with to invest with them. It was illegal. 1933 Securities Act banned that. 2012 Jobs Act turned it around. So since 1933, minimums just kept on going up as these small cliques, right? These closed door networks across the country. You can think of them as the classic country club cliche network. These small groups became wealthier and wealthier. The buy-ins to developer projects went up and up. So what crowdfunding did was it opened the doors to these private groups and it made them public. And a few things happened as a result of that. Number one, or publicly visible. Number one, yes, minimums went down. There are some minimums, I think for the accredited investor, you know, I've seen them down as low as $5,000. For non-accredited investors, again, it's a minor part of it. You can buy real estate with as little as $5. It's unbelievable, right? There's some platforms will let you buy them for $5. And don't sneeze at that, by the way. That anybody who's approaching the market to find $5 investors is speaking to the next generation of wealth, right? The millennials. This generation who is going to be, first of all, communicating and transacting online as a primary source of commerce. And secondly, that is going to be inheriting all the wealth of the baby boomers, right? Mm-hmm. So start mm-hmm. today while these folk are students and early career, and you'll have them in the future when they inherit their parents' wealth, right? So that's a long-term trend that you can look at. Now, what you also talked about was direct ownership. And that is certainly what accredited investors are looking for. They want to own real estate. They understand the benefits of owning real estate. They understand that the wealthiest people in their communities are real estate developers. Think about the physicians or dentists, right? To pick one demographic. These folks see their patients coming in day in, day out. And who are the ones pulling up in the fanciest cars? They're the real estate investors. And historically, those physicians have never had access to investing with real estate developers until now. And now, and I've just finished this one final thought. The way that the industry used to be structured was that they were these kind of backroom private deals, like closed door private deals between small groups of people who all knew each other. But what that also meant was that information was contained in discrete bubbles around the country, right? There was no cross-pollination of information. If you knew a guy at your local country club and you wanted to invest with them, all you knew about commercial real estate, preferred returns, promotes, you know, what all the dynamics of real estate was what that one guy told you. If you were lucky, you might know two at the country club, but you certainly didn't know what anybody in any other city or state was doing. So you didn't know what the standard was, right? You could be sold anything locally. What crowdfunding has done is it has exposed the entire industry to examination. Now you can look at deals across the country. You can see sponsors in any state, in any city, in any asset class of any size and scale. You can see their offering documents. You can understand how real estate investing has been conducted for the last, since 1933, for the last 80 years.
But let me interrupt you for a minute. You can understand that because you're a real estate expert, Adam. How about the people who are the dilettantes? They want to get into crowdfunding. And this is one of the points Benjamin Cole made in the article that, by the way, the title of the article for our listeners, if you want to go to the website and call it up, is called The Madness of Crowds. And now madness is, it's kind of a double entendre because it's the, you know, people have gone mad for real estate for good reason. As Adam Gower is saying, people get rich with real estate. It happens all the time, probably more with that than anything. So, but there's also the madness of how do you pick a proper platform, a proper sponsor, to use a British term, proper, and then figure out those documents, look at those documents and really see them for what they are. How do you assess that, hey, this is a, you know, a deal that is going to be profitable versus this is a highly possibly overbuilt submarket. I don't know what all is going in there. I don't have all that research and I don't have the time to do it all. What about that?
Well, gosh, I'm so glad you asked that. There's two answers to that question. One is a question. Okay. So the first answer, the actual answer is real simple, education. And that is how the industry is evolving, right? People don't know what real estate is. And so if you look online, what you will find is an explosion of educational materials, right? That's number one. And everybody wants to learn. Anybody listening to this podcast wants to learn. Hopefully they do, right? Learn something. Don't walk away too disappointed. But that's what we want. We grow through learning. And if you're looking to invest, you want to learn about what you're investing in. So number one answer to your question is education. That is a dominant theme in the industry. But the second answer to your question is a question. And that question is, how do you know what stocks to buy? I remember in the early 1980s.
You buy an index. You buy the S&P 500 index.
Wait a second, Mike. Hold on 1 second. You are presupposing that anybody that's listening knows what the index is. In the early 1980s, which means you're presupposing that they have been educated to know what that is. But in the early 1980s, when I was first in America, I remember if you wanted to buy a stock, you went to a stockbroker, right? And that person guided you through the process. You couldn't do it any other way. Mm-hmm. And then technology and laws and regulations disintermediated those people. And so what took the place? Now suddenly you have anybody that wants to buy a stock no longer being guided by the educational stories that brokers were providing, stories in a positive way, right? They were telling you the story of a stock, right? Now those people have been disintermediated and they've gone away. How at that time did people figure out, well, now I can buy stocks directly myself. I can go online and I can trade whenever I want. What do I buy? Well, the answer to that question then, as it is in stock market, as it is today in commercial real estate, private equity finance, is education. People learned what a mutual fund is, what a stock index is, you know, how to find out good recommendations for a stock or what analysts are, etc. It's all about education.
So as I'm educating myself in crowdfunding platforms, what am I going to learn about how the industry is performing? What kind of returns are they getting? Is this has it been good? Has it been mediocre? And I realize that, you know, it depends on where you look. But if you were to peanut butter it, average it all out, is crowdfunding performing?
Yeah. So, you know, in here lies the rub, right? Of course it's been performing. Everybody's making money. It's like going to Vegas and always winning. The crowdfunding was legalized in 2012. The laws were promulgated in 2013 and 14. What can you tell me about the real estate industry in the United States since 2014? It has done nothing but go up, right? Basically, with a few little minor bumps along the way. But for the most part, if you bought something a year ago and went to sleep, you could sell it today for a profit, right? Everybody knows that.
That doesn't mean there aren't losers in there too.
There are losers, but there are always going to be losers, right? And there are also always going to be fraudsters and criminals, right? But that applies to any industry. Mm-hmm. I'm on the SEC, the press release, whatever, newsletter. And you see this all the time. Somebody actively attempting to defraud consumers, they'll do that no matter what you're selling, right? Doesn't matter. And there are going to be circumstances where you do invest in real estate and either for any reason, something goes wrong. But those are no more frequent in real estate crowdfunded deals as they are in the overall population, right? They're not misrepresented or overrepresented in crowdfunding than they are in the overall market. Mm-hmm. However, as Warren Buffett is frequently quoted as saying, you only know who's swimming naked when the tide goes out, right?
True.
And when there is a major downturn, a real downturn, as everybody undoubtedly understands on this call, that is when you see the bloodshed in the streets, right? But you cannot predict that. Today, you think everything's going well. You wouldn't invest unless you did. But if you just think about those times when you have invested and seen something go south, when there was a black swan event or a major recession, you know you can't predict it. And it's during that next event that we will discover, actually, which sponsors have been prudent and which have not been.
Right. Now, if you're going to get involved in crowdfunding, say you're an average person, but you're looking to invest in real estate, would you not agree that you want to put patient money in there? You have to ride out a downturn or you end up losing, because even good real estate managers are going to have their down times. But what's essential is that people don't panic, that they say, this money can sit, I'm letting it ride, I don't have to pull it unless there's some unforeseen emergency. But a lot of times what people do is they just kind of freak out and think, I made the wrong investment. They pull their money and then they look and 6 months later, everything's been restored, or there's even been a gain. And it's like, now they come in at a high price. And it's like they say, I mean, statistically, most people lose money in a bull market on Wall Street because they pull out every time the market goes down, and they buy back in when it's high. It's kind of ridiculous. I just want to say that our audience, this podcast is appearing on both our private wealth mm-hmm. website, which are advisors who would steer investors to crowdfunding opportunities. This is assuming they can, because some RIAs are very strict about what you can make available, but also it's appearing on the institutional site. And I know that you have said there are more people, more institutions are getting interested in crowdfunding. Tell me about that. How are they getting interested? Where do they see their opportunity to plug in?
So I'm glad you asked that question. Look, this topic is the very, very sharp edge of the pointed edge of the arrow, right? This is absolutely brand new. So anything that we talk about now is a conjecture about where it's going to go into the future, obviously. What I'm seeing is an increase in interest from two primary sources. Number one, from institutional investors, right? So I've worked for institutions in my career. And the folk that I've spoken to, and I've done podcasts as well with some of my folk that I've worked with in the past who still work for institutions, they are fascinated by this new opportunity for high net worth individuals to invest in real estate. They're fascinated. It is a curiosity, right? So as Jeff mentioned on the podcast we did together last
week. Jeffrey Dorman, our founder and CEO. Right. Mm-hmm.
On the podcast actually we published this morning. Yeah, he said that you notice, you can recognize where the future is by paying attention to the peripheries. And so institutions, in my experience, right, and this is purely anecdotal, are recognizing the emergence of crowdfunding as a significant force in real estate capital formation on the peripheries, and inevitably it is going to start encroaching further and further into the institutional world. And I would like to talk about that specifically in a moment. The other thing that I'm seeing that's very important for your listeners, especially institutional listeners, is that sponsors, tenured, multi-generational, multi-decade, multi-cycle sponsors, exactly the kind of people that you want to be investing in as an institution, they are also paying attention to crowdfunding. They want to find and identify alternate sources of capital so that when the institutions, what's the word I want to use without being in any way derogatory, when the institutions
encroach,
pull back.
Okay.
Yes. And that, you know full well that during downturns, global financial crisis, beginning of pandemic, right? Institutions who are fiduciaries to their capital sources, they pull back. And they say, we cannot invest now because we don't know what's happening. It is too uncertain. We're reining back. What happens? Liquidity dries up. And yet those very same sponsors who have come to rely on institutions for capital are suddenly without capital, yet they are exposed to extraordinary buy opportunities. Because prices are depressed and yet the capital has dried up, for heaven's sake. So sponsors, and there's lots of reasons for it, but this is one very good reason. Sponsors need and want alternate sources of capital than just institutional capital for those kinds of occasions and for other reasons. And so what I am seeing is more and more sponsors coming to my door whose entire history has been to raise capital from institutional partners who are looking for those alternative sources of capital and who are actively exploring and engaging in the high net worth investor community via crowdfunding.
Interesting. Let me ask you about property types. If you were to make a pie chart of all crowdfunding and the property types it's directed to, what would dominate that pie? What would get the largest slice of that pie? Would that be multifamily? Would it be industrial?
I mean, multifamily. Don't even go any further. Yeah,
multifamily.
It's end of story. But what you're also seeing, though, is multifamily is so ridiculously overpriced everywhere. I've been through multiple cycles. I just look at it and think, there's no way. Is it sustainable? 20%. Yeah. One of my, I saw an email this morning, one of the news feeds. prices are going up 2% a month. Rental rates, 2% a month in Southern Florida.
Yeah, it's crazy.
There's just no sustain. It cannot be sustained, right? It should be of concern to everybody listening, right? So multifamily, yes.
What property type do you like? Would you like to see start to get wedged into that, get a wedge of that pie? What property type? Since multifamily is at risk. I'm sorry.
What's your question, Mike?
Well, other than multifamily poses a somewhat of a risk, perhaps, what other property type would you like to see crowdfunding capital going to?
Well, I tell you what, I do see crowdfunded capital going to on a first-hand basis: self-storage, senior housing, triple net, medical office buildings, office buildings, downtown office buildings. What else we got? Trying to think. I mean, industrial, B and C class industrial. I mean,
really, data center. I don't know about data centers. Probably not data centers, huh? I don't know if
I haven't seen data centers. Yeah. Those haven't come across my radar yet. But Mike, I know you're going down a certain path. Do you mind if I?
You go ahead and steer me back. Go ahead and steer me back. What? Because I want you to make. Emphasize with our listeners what's really the most important thing to know here. Now, yeah. I just want to say before you start up, Unleashed again is the title of the book. If you want to learn more about it, you go to gowercrowd.com. It's in the program notes, that website. I'm sorry, go ahead, Adam.
Thanks so much.
The highlights?
Yeah, so here's what I really wanted to mention when you asked about the emergence of crowdfunding in the institutional world. What is the impact of that? What does that mean exactly? So I've described that sponsors who are used to raising money from institutions are looking at crowdfunding. So there's a few things going on there. When I talk about the tip of the arrow, this is what I'm talking about. There's nothing definitive. This is strictly my observations of what's happening for discussion and to understand where the industry is going, all right? So sponsors are looking at crowdfunding who have typically only gone to institutions. Why are they doing that? All right, so we talked about the opportunities during downturns and the lack of liquidity and the need for alternate sources of capital. But there's another very important reason. That very important reason is money from crowdfunding sources is less expensive, and more importantly, significantly less onerous on the day-to-day operations of a real estate project when you go to the crowd. Because if I come to you as an institution, I say, I want $20 or $50 million for this deal, you're going to put a huge team of attorneys and specialists and third-party consultants and a whole army of people to negotiate with me and to underwrite that deal. And then you're going to button me down to some terms and conditions that essentially leave me managing the property by committee, right? Mm-hmm. If I want to add some debt, or I want to do this, I want to sell, I want to buy, whatever I want to do, budget restraint, all kinds of conditions you're layering on me in return for those huge checks. When I go to the crowd, I say, here's my contract, right? My operating agreement, my offering docs. They are take it or leave it. If you want to invest $25,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 or $150,000 or $200,000 or $500,000 with me, sign here. If you don't invest, right? Mm-hmm. It's okay with me. So that's incredibly attractive. Now, importantly, why is, and now I'm just brainstorming, right? Mike, seriously, I've not heard anyone talk this way before, but these are the thoughts that I have about where this is going to go. Institutions should embrace this. Why? Because if you think about it, pension funds, endowments, insurance companies, etc. Where is that money coming from? Well, guess what? It's coming from the same people as our crowdfunding. It's the same people at the end of the day, at the bottom of these pyramids, all of them, are people just like you and me. We either pay into a pension fund, or we buy insurance, or we choose to invest in stocks, or we choose to invest in commercial real estate. So in any one deal, if there's an institution and if there's crowdfunded capital, it's the same people. ultimately whose money is financing that transaction. So from an institutional investor's perspective, it's highly attractive because you can embrace a sponsor who wants crowdfunding. Because you could ask them, for example, hey, look, normally we would want 20% co-invest. I'm pulling this out of my ear. 10% co-invest, 5% co-invest. But if you want to bring in crowdfunded investors, we'll increase that to from 5 to 7% or from 5 to 10%. Like, go out and bring that in. And the attraction, first of all, it de-risks the investment because there's more co-invest. But the other thing that's nice that is sellable to the sponsor is that the sponsor can now tell the crowd, hey, guess what? This deal has been underwritten by institutions. Nobody underwrites real estate investment better than institutions with their armies of third-party consultants and attorneys. So back to your question, how do you know what's a good deal? Invest with an institution.
Interesting.
That's the best possible way of doing it.
It's being vetted at a very high level. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I would like to see happen. The concern that the sponsors that I talk to have about going to the crowd is that institutions will consider it, I don't know, negative in some way. But I think it's to everybody's benefit because at the end of the day, it's the same people's money. We're all fiduciaries of the same people's money. So why not work together to enhance the real estate industry for everybody and give individuals the opportunity to invest in real estate through their pension fund, through their insurance, right? Or through their 401k, whatever it is, at low risk, right? And low return, and also have a flutter on the higher risk returns that you get from being in the equity side of the deal, the high risk equity.
What is it going to take to be able to get involved in crowdfunding through, say, a 401k or a retirement plan of some kind? I mean, is that very realistic that it would be? What's it going to take, Mike?
Crowdfunding it has this these negative connotations because people think of donation based and I've got this wacky hat, I want to crowdfund it, right? It's like you don't think of it as being mainstream. By the way, it was never intended for real estate. When Congress passed the act in 2012, it was the Jobs Act, Jumpstart our business startups, and so real estate benefited. Because every single real estate deal is a business. Every deal has an SPE, right? Single purpose entity or some kind of entity is set up and then shares are sold. That's why it's governed by the securities laws. So to answer your question about how do, 401ks or whatever, how does money flow into crowdfunding? It's a little bit outside of my expertise, right? How funds transact at that level, but they are just stocks. They're actually no different from any other kind of stock. They're just not publicly traded, right? But they are stocks. So any entity that decides that they want to pay attention to real estate crowdfunding and to direct their investor capital, a wealth manager, for example, who wants to direct investor capital to real estate deals can buy into these deals just as easily as they can buy, well, not quite just as easily, but they can buy into these deals in the same way as you can buy stocks and shares. Go online, look up deals, figure out if you like the risk profile, and then sign the contracts and wire your money. And you can do that as a fiduciary. A lot of people do use self-directed IRAs to invest in commercial real estate.
Yeah, that's what you have to do is open a brokerage account at the local RIA that you're working with because they don't do that. It's like you need to do that on the side on your own. And, hopefully they're happy to advise. But at the same time, a lot of times they're restricted as far as what they can offer and the kind of consulting they can do.
Yes, but you know what? Independent wealth managers and RIAs are not, don't have the same restrictions. And there are an increasing number who do offer private real estate investments to their clients as part of the portfolios that they manage.
Good point. Now, well, how big do you think crowdfunding can become? I mean, realistically, it's really attractive, the whole idea that everybody can play and we can, these capital pools can be, sourced from millions of people. But how big do you think crowdfunding can, if you look 5-10 years down the road, and I know this is a prognostication, it's probably not a fair question. Blame you for taking the fifth on this one, but where do you see it going? Because I bet your book says something about that.
I'm not guilty of anything that I'm prepared to admit to, so don't worry about the fifth. yes. So I would say like this. 5 years ago, I would never have predicted that crowdfunding could have hit $15 billion 5 years later. 25% of private equity capital formation for real estate. Huge in 5 years. In another 5 years, I think there's no doubt at all that it will completely replace non-crowdfunded transactions. There are some frictions, frictions of having done it, always done it this way. You know, right? We've always done it this way. We don't need to do it that way, is the primary resistance that we're seeing at the moment. But those barriers are being broken down by sponsors, right? We've always done specifically Regulation D 506B offerings is how people typically raise money, non-crowdfunding. You have to have a pre-existing relationship. 506C allows you to conduct general solicitation. And that is going to completely displace 506 B offerings, I would say, within the next 5 years. You won't see, I can't imagine why anybody would want to do a 506 B offering. I don't know why they do today, other than lack of understanding what the advantages are of doing a C, in other words, a crowdfunded deal. Mm-hmm. So the answer to your question is, I think it will completely replace all other forms of capital formation for private equity.
Now, when you wrote your book, what do you expect our listeners, they get a copy of your book, they read it. What do you think the major walkaway is? Maybe the major walkaway or two or three things that you expect and maybe strategize to be the takeaways?
Well, I think the biggest surprise is the surprises that I had. I mean, the really biggest takeaway is the speed with which it has grown from zero to 25% of all capital formation, right? That's number. I mean, it absolutely blew me away. The second is the reinforcement of this thesis that sponsors want alternative forms of capital specifically for downturns. And we've talked about other reasons why they're looking at crowdfunding, but specifically during downturns is the data that we found looking at what happened to crowdfunding last year, right? The first downturn, everybody was forced to work from home. Everybody was forced to work online. Trends that had been in place for 20 years, right? Since the internet, started really 20 something years ago, were suddenly accelerated when everybody sat online. And so the biggest takeaway is, boom, during a downturn, crowdfunding, online commerce, including the acquisition of shares in real estate deals across the country, over doubled. That's huge. It's just huge that you can see that playing out during this little downturn last year. So I would say those are the biggest, the scale, the percentage of capital formation, and the resilience during a downturn to this form of liquidity.
Do you know how many real estate crowdfunding platforms or sponsors exist now and how fast they're growing? And not each one, but the number of them.
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah, that is actually in the book. Oh, here we are. New sponsors. So here we go. It's on page 41. New sponsors using crowdfunding went from zero, obviously, in 2012. And each year in 2020, an additional 128 added. We're predicting an additional 155. That's not cumulative. That's a new sponsors entering crowdfunding. That's a lot.
Yeah.
It might not seem like it, but that's a lot of sponsors coming to this.
Our guest has been Adam Gower. He is with GowerCrowd.com. He's author of the book Unleashed. And Adam, you could not be more expressive or enthusiastic about this space. Interesting to hear what you're seeing. A lot of stuff there that I was not aware of. I really appreciate you taking the time, getting me up to speed. I'm sure a lot of our listeners up to speed on this really exciting segment of real estate financing and investment.
Well, thank you. I really, really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and specifically to your audience. I think it's very important that institutions and wealth managers understand how relevant this is and how much more relevant it's going to become.